Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Simon Phipps joins me. We're going to be talking about CouchDB 2.0, one of those NoSQL databases that now scales even better. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, everybody. It's time for our annual audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It helps us understand our audience better, know what you like and don't like, how you listen to the show. It also helps us tell advertisers what kind of people listen. But I promise you, your feedback is always kept personally anonymous. All you have to do is visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It'll just take a few minutes and it'll help us make TWiT even better. We really appreciate your support and any help you can give us. twit.tv/survey.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Simon Phipps. Episode 378, recorded March 8, 2016. CouchDB 2.0. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by DigitalOcean. Simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code FLOSS in the billing section to get your $10 credit. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/floss and enter the promo code FLOSS. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneAge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, updates of projects like we have today, about things you might want to download right after the show and go play with, or maybe things you're using every day and not actually aware of it. Joining me today is my lovely and talented co-host, Simon Phipps. Welcome back to the show.
It's great to be back again, Randall.
Very cool, very cool. And where are you in your secret, not Liverpool, you're the other guy.
Brit. Yeah. I'm the other end of the country. I'm in my my secret bunker in my garden. In yes. Southampton on the south coast, famous for being the home port of the Titanic and the destination if you take a cruise from New York to the UK.
Very good, very good. And some people can probably tell by the video that I'm in my Silicon Rainforest apartment from my bedroom. No, that doesn't make sense at all. And usually I'm fighting the sun, but this time I'm fighting the sun in a different way, and I'm hopefully not going to be fighting any leaf blowers today. So we'll see how that goes. Okay, but this isn't This Week in Geography. This is indeed Floss Weekly. We have two guests on today. One of them is actually a guest that was back on the show back in 2008, Jan Leonard. And he's going to talk to us about the updates they've been making to CouchDB. I talked to him back at OSCON 2008 about what CouchDB was all about and stuff, and he's coming back to talk more about that. And he's joined by Garen Smith, what's one of those? I usually mangle people's names, I'm sorry. And they're both going to talk to us about some of the projects they've been working on for Apache CouchDB. So we had CouchDB on, like I said, 2008. It's one of those SQL document storage systems, and it works really well with the web. We'll obviously get better update from them. I can go on for a little while about that, but we'll dive right into it in a few minutes. Simon, are you familiar with CouchDB?
Not particularly. I've got friends who've used it and friends who've worked there, but it's not a specialty of mine. I don't know very much about it. We used to call these things storage engines back in the old days.
Yeah, yes, yeah. And there's a whole bunch of them right there. In fact, just a few weeks ago, we had ToroDB on the show, which was actually a MongoDB, I guess they all ended DB, huh? A MongoDB implementation, but using Postgres as the back end, which is pretty cool. But we'll find out what's specific about CouchDB and what's actually been going on by talking to our guests. We'll bring them on in a couple minutes, but first I have a very important announcement, because whether you're developing an app, a website, or working on a server-based project, you need flexible, reliable, and affordable hosting. DigitalOcean offers Droplets, which are virtual private servers that can be customized and deployed easily to host websites, web apps, production applications, personal projects, virtual desktops, and almost anything else you can think of with full root access. This helps you get your project off the ground quickly and makes it easy to scale when you find success.
DigitalOcean is used by over 600,000 developers, including me. I found out about these guys at scale last year, and I've had a box up and fired up the entire time between then and now. You can deploy and configure your droplets via a streamlined control panel or a simple API. You can choose your OS, Ubuntu, CentOS, Debian, Fedora, CoreOS, and FreeBSD. You can select from one of the many pre-configured one-clicks like Drupal, Docker, or Node.js to get up and running quickly or build the exact infrastructure you need with root access to servers running 100% SSDs in the state-of-the-art data centers around the world. It's highly scalable to meet the demands of a rapidly growing application or business. You can also use advanced features like floating IPs for high availability, private networking, and automated deployments via API. There's an extremely active community with a large and detailed set of tutorials on all the ways you can use your droplet. Want to configure a LAMP server, set up a virtual desktop or VPN? They've got you covered. And it's so easy to get started. You can deploy an SSD cloud server in as little as 55 seconds. I have observed this. It is true. DigitalOcean is incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing. Servers start at only $5 a month. There's also hourly pricing available starting at less than a penny per hour. We're going to make it so you can get started today and deploy an SSD cloud server for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account information, go to the billing section and enter the promo code FLOSS for a free $10 credit. That's plenty to get started and explore what DigitalOcean can do. That's DigitalOcean.com. Be sure to enter the promo code FLOSS in the billing section to get your $10 credit for free. We thank DigitalOcean for their support of Floss Weekly. And now let's go ahead and bring on our guest, Jan Leonard. Welcome back to the show.
Hello.
Yeah, it's been a while, huh?
Oh, yeah. I barely remembered that I was on the show. It was that long ago, yeah.
Yeah. And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm in Berlin, Germany now.
Very good. Very cool. And let's go ahead and also bring on Garen Smith?
I think it's Garen.
Okay. Hi, everyone. It's Garen, and I'm talking to you from Johannesburg in South Africa.
Very good. Very good. Okay, well, let's start with you, Jan. Give us the 30,000-foot view. I quickly glossed over what I think it's about, but why don't you tell us what problem CouchDB is solving and what's changed since 2008?
Oh, so many things. the core idea of Couch then and now, wow. I'm a bit stunned. Sorry, the core idea is because I'm currently reflecting the change between 2008 and now, and there's a lot of things that have changed in the sense that we are now understanding Couch better than we did then. Even though we already had the software, we didn't quite understand much about it. So Now we're way further ahead. So that's totally inside baseball and not interesting to anyone except for me and Garen. So the problem that CouchDB solves is a very similar problem that Git solves for developers, but on a database level. So with Git, you have your local checkout and a centralized like code hosting service like GitHub or Bitbucket, and then there's a CI server that runs your tests and a production system and the test system. And with Git, you can push code back and forth between all these locations. And that make like open source very productive, and it's obviously a good thing. I don't have to explain to anyone how this works. CouchDB is, in concept, very similar, but it's the same concept, but for your database or your data that you can have anywhere you like. One of the easier solutions, say, or like scenarios is you have an office in Johannesburg and one in Berlin. And now there's an app running on top of Couch. And now I could be using that app in Johannesburg, but then for every request that I want to make, I have to take the 200 millisecond round trip to Johannesburg and back. And kind of takes a long time. So instead, I could replicate, that's what we call it in CouchDB, the whole database to Berlin, have the app running here, and always have local access to the data, while at the same time keeping a replication open to Johannesburg. So any changes that, for example, Garen makes in the app, I see almost instantly here, and vice versa. And we can add more locations all over the world. And that goes all the way down to a situation where I have a mobile phone or a browser on a mobile device where I use CouchDB, or in this case, PouchDB, which we'll get into later, where I have an app that runs on my phone. And you all know this when you start to use public transit, for example, a subway, where your internet connection goes really bad, or you get on a plane where there's no Indiegogo, and your apps stop working, and it's really frustrating. With CouchDB and PouchDB and a bunch of other projects, you can build applications that work anywhere all the time, but they can still replicate and synchronize all your data when you have an internet connection. When you don't want to use Git as a metaphor, if you think of IMAP and how email works, you can always write emails when you use IMAP, right? But you know they only ever get sent when you get back online on a Wi-Fi or wherever. And with CouchDB Core replication technology, you can make any app work that way. So you can always work offline, but it also works when you have an internet connection, and then everything gets synced around. So that's the core of why CouchDB is important or relevant in today's ecosystem of data storage systems.
Yeah, and I was just going to ask, what makes this special? I mean, there's a lot of document storage systems out there. What are the key features of Couch that make it unique?
Well, starting out, maybe we were one of the first ones to popularize the idea of having JSON-based document storage. Now everybody else thinks that's a good idea. Like MySQL and Postgres now have JSON storage as well. Of course, there's MongoDB and a bunch of others. So on the one hand, we're kind of trailblazing. Other core features are all the programming bits that you want to do with the database are done in JavaScript. So it's really easy to learn for a lot of web developers. The main application interface is HTTP, so you don't need any drivers to talk to Couch. You can just use a browser or curl or any HTTP library that comes with any programming language to use it. And then, of course, the replication that I mentioned and a bit of an ecosystem of like family projects. One is called PouchDB. It's a JavaScript implementation, runs in the browser. Garen can talk about that a little bit more later. That all implement this replication protocol. So these data sync scenarios that I mentioned earlier, they can be made to work in a lot of different environments with that.
So one of the things I'm curious about then is how, Mongo has their client libraries to actually talk to the Mongo servers. And part of what that's providing is discovery services. So if you in a high availability situation, you can automatically fail over to the next one. How would you do that with something like AJAX and HTTP? Does that have to be written in as part of the client code?
You can do that if you want to, but because HTTP is an open standard that is used for a lot of other things, you can just use existing infrastructure there as well. So I'm currently running, for example, a setup with an HA proxy, like an HTTP proxy. That's one of the more popular implementations. But I could also use, there's like dedicated HTTP proxying hardware that I could use for failover. If I'm on AWS, I can use their load balancer to route to different nodes. So I don't actually have to have anything CouchDB specific to make an HA situation work.
Okay. That makes sense then. One of the things that one of the other key things that I don't think you brought this up yet is the MapReduce feature. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Garen, do you want to take that one maybe?
Yeah, sure. So MapReduce is the way that CouchDB works in terms of querying. And it works really, it's got an interesting way of working. It's a bit of a paradigm shift to what you're kind of used to and maybe working with kind of a SQL-based database. But the basic concept is that you kind of create a MapReduce, you write it in JavaScript typically. And from then onwards, CouchDB then builds an index for you. So the first time you query this kind of MapReduce view, so we kind of call it views in CouchDB world.
Sure.
The first time you query it, it builds up that whole big view and builds that index and calculate those results. So the first time you actually query it, it can be quite slow. But after that, it can be really nice and fast because the results are actually then pre-computed. So what happens then is the first time you query it, like I said, it's going to be a little bit slow. The second time you get it, you're going to get those results back immediately. And then if in between queries, you get data documents that are then updated, what happens then is the next time you query that view, all it does is it just looks at the specific documents that have been updated, updates the index from those documents and then sends out the data from that. So you actually get a really, really nice, fast response from CouchDB from that. So it's kind of one of those interesting trade-offs where you've got this, the first time you create it's going to be a little bit slow, but after that you get really nice responses and the data sent back to you quite quickly.
You said you could write these queries in JavaScript. You must have an embedded JavaScript engine inside this then somewhere, right?
Yeah, so we're using the Mozilla engine. The one that runs inside of Firefox. The name actually escapes me right now. But that's what we're doing. Spider Monkey, that's it. So we're using Spider Monkey at the moment, and that's basically typically, you write in JavaScript, we hand it off to that. It does some calculation, sends it back to CouchDB, and CouchDB then stores those results for you.
And I keep thinking of all the MongoDB conversations I've had, but can this shard have larger data sets?
I know Jan is dying to answer that, so yeah.
All right. So yeah, that's we talked about what happened in the past 8 years. That's one of the big changes that comes with CouchDB 2.0. CouchDB 1.0 or 1X, the whole series, always was designed to be in a situation where you could do more high availability and also scale out situations. But none of the code that actually does that was built into Couch. You had to build it yourself, set up a proxy and say, okay, if I can't reach that node, use the other one and make sure that everything's replicated to have enough replicas to work from and all that kind of stuff. And CouchDB 2.0 has all that built in. So all you do is spin up three or more nodes on three servers or virtual machines, connect them via IP and password, and then CouchDB does everything else for you. You can talk to any one node that you want. You can put a proxy in front if you want, or tell the client, like hard code in the client library, which your nodes are, whichever you want to do. We recommend a proxy, of course. And then you can scale out, have sharding going on. And MapReduce was designed, or the CouchDB MapReduce was designed specifically to support that use case. So there's no functional change between one and two. So there's no feature that breaks in Couch now that you're upgrading to 2.0 and are finally in a sharded situation, which is quite nice.
Well, I have one other question to follow up on that real quick. Obviously you've had a lot of use of CouchDB over the years because you're talking about having more and more experiences. How big have these databases gotten? What's the largest one you're aware of?
There's a couple in the terabytes. I mean, if you're looking at, there's some clients using it that are, dealing with terabytes of data.
Right. And that's even on the single node 1X series, and of course on the two series there's already users that are also in similar sizes. So just big, period.
So can you tell me a little bit about the CouchDB community? You're at Apache. How has being at Apache worked out for the CouchDB community? Is it helping? Is it harmful? What would you say?
Bit of both. I'm very happy to be an Apache project with CouchDB. There's definitely some challenges, but Apache is it's a dynamic organization, and if you actually care about it, you can go in and help change it. So we've done a lot of work. CouchDB, for example, was the first project at Apache that used Git, and one of our community contributors led up the effort to make Git available for all Apache projects, and now the majority of projects using Git there. So again, trailblazing a little bit there. But on the other hand, as opposed to other open source projects that were just starting out on GitHub, they don't have to work on infrastructure like this. So there's a bit of time that goes into fixing our environment as opposed to working on our project. But one of the big advantages is... I think the big advantages are twofold. One is that Apache has a mantra called community over code. And the thinking is if you get the right people rallied around a project, then the right code will follow. And that means that we have a bunch of procedures in place that make sure that everybody can get heard if they have an opinion, but also that that people can't deadlock the project so it can continue to go. And there's a lot of focusing on making sure that the community is healthy. I'm the vice president as part of CouchDB, which means I'm representing CouchDB to the foundation. And that means once a quarter, I have to write a report how healthy or how well CouchDB is doing. And a big part of that is how healthy the community is. So how many messages go on the mailing lists and all that kind of stuff. So that's the one big thing. It's a focus on community, and that has served us very, very well. We've grown CouchDB from a handful of contributors in 2008 to over 50 regular contributors now. And that's without all the drive-by contributors, which is very nice.
Right.
I think it's a – sorry, Jan, if I step in there. But I think it's a really interesting position to be in because, writing code and building a project is hard. And building something like CouchDB, it's a database that is really hard. But then dealing with people is even harder. And I think that's always the toughest problem. And I think – Apache helps in that sense is that they have some really nice guidelines. So you're going to get into situations where people are so passionate about KatchDB that, you know, people want to push their specific ideas, or they're getting frustrated because maybe some of the ideas are not getting developed as fast. And what's really nice is Apache provides really nice guidelines and certain structures so that we can make sure that everyone feels heard and that we can try and encourage great commitment, and as well as create an environment where people can have really good discussions, appropriate discussions, and a way to resolve disagreements and things like that. So in some sense, it does add a little bit more bureaucracy around it, because some certain things, the way we do things, we have to kind of watch out for licensing or infrastructure and those kind of things do add some kind of complexity. But it does really make it a little bit more, kind of gives you a bit more of a guideline when working in a community. And I think, and as Jan says, you know, the whole idea sometimes is community over code. And I think that's a really, it's a subtle mind shift, but I think it makes a big difference in kind of keeping the health of the community kind of going. And I mean, KatchDB, we were big on pushing the code of conduct. I think Jan, you know, explains it better, but I mean, that was one of the things that we were really big and we pushed. Joan was really involved in doing that. And from that, Apache has now adopted that whole code of conduct on. So you can make those changes and push it through the whole kind of Apache foundation, which is also really nice.
Right. So going back to Jan briefly, you were the lucky winner of the responsibility to write the vice president's report. How healthy is the community? Having lots of committers is great, but do you have a good, vibrant set of commercial implementers and supporters in the code, or is it very much an individual contributor sort of culture? And I understand that Apache pretends to be an individual contributor culture even when it's not, so there's no need to dig into that.
No, it's okay. So as far as if we look at any of the graphs that we have in terms of people, the discussions going on, commits going into the code, all our charts go up and to the right. Maybe not very steep, but they constantly go up, which is nice, which means more stuff is going on from more people and more people interested. A couple of years back, we had a bit of a slump for various reasons that I'll get back, I can get into when you get me drunk at a bar, but that's not important for today.
I will do that. Fosden.
Yeah. Okay, deal. And now I lost my train of thought. The contributorness of it. When I mentioned earlier, there's the advantages of being with Apache is twofold. One is the community, we talked about that, and the other one is creating a level playing field for corporations to contribute to open source without being able to dominate it. So we have a bunch of companies, and the biggest of those is IBM, who is contributing a lot of code to KatchDB. And in fact, the core feature of 2.0, the clustering that I talked about, has been brought in from a company that knows a company called Cloudant that is now owned by IBM, that has been running that clustered solution, has developed and has been running this clustered solution as a database as a service since 2011. So we're getting a lot of production ready code here, but there is no way for IBM to dominate the project in a way, because the individual contributors like myself or Garen can still fight it out with them. They, even though they may currently be a majority contributor because of that particular feature they are providing, they don't dominate the project politics, which is very nice.
And do you have other commercial contributors that are on a scale with IBM, or are they head and shoulders ahead of the...
Are there any other companies as big as IBM? As far as contributors go, so there's a very famous fruit company that can't officially work on open source unless it's WebKit in a way. So there are some hidden secret channels where you can never trace it back to them. They help a little bit out. There's a bunch of small companies around it, but IBM is as far as the big one goes, is the big one.
Right. And so you... Garen mentioned there your inclusion policy activities. Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about that, because that's often been a controversial topic in older open source communities. So tell me about how you did that.
That was really fun. So as a sneak peek, I'll also be the guest on next week's show to talk about Hoodie, which is kind of a we'll get into it next week. But Hoodie is an open source project that is not with the Apache Software Foundation that thought it was a good idea to have a code of conduct. When the Catchupy project saw that Hoodie was doing it, they thought that was also a very good idea. And then Joe and Tose, one of our core contributors and also one of our PMC members, that's the project management committee, so the people who feel responsible for keeping Couch alive and healthy, sat down and wrote our code of conduct. And we also wrote a diversity statement that specifically said that we're looking for more people that don't look like me, white in the beard and all that kind of stuff, together with Noah Slater. And that was partly in response to what I mentioned with Hoodie, but partly in response to that we had a not so very nice player in the community where there was never any open disagreement that we could resolve through the usual disagreement resolution channels, but that Garen mentioned earlier. But I was just not nice behavior. And with the code of conduct, we could codify what we expect from people and as a result could rein in that person. So we had could basically fix our culture. And then it was an ApacheCon Europe, I think, a couple of weeks later. And the Apache board got notice that we had a code of conduct all of a sudden, and they thought it was a really good idea to have one of those. And yeah, within a matter of weeks, adapted it for all of the Apache Software Foundation. So all 200 something or 300 something projects now have the code of conduct that we pioneered. Again, something that we kind of spearheaded within the ASF. So while you're right, that is traditionally a topic of great discussion in older communities, it was no problem, wasn't a big problem at the ASF as far as I can tell. Everybody thought that was a good idea.
So we have a lot more questions to ask of you guys. I especially want to get into PouchDB because we keep bringing it up. But I believe we have an important visitor with an important message for us.
Hey, I don't want to interrupt, but we'll have more Floss Weekly in a bit. But first, I want to talk about my mattress. I love my mattress. In fact, I told Randall, look, let me do the Casper ads because I sleep on a Casper and I love it. Casper is a retailer, online retailer of premium mattresses at a fraction of the price because you're buying direct from the factory. They're made in the USA. And by eliminating the showrooms and the resellers, they're really cutting the price significantly. You're getting really kind of a neat engineering feat, too. They've married latex and memory foam to give you the best of both without any of the negatives. It's a cool breathing mattress that's firm but giving. It's hard to describe. It's like my mother. Firm but giving. You sleep on it and you just feel great. You're comfortable. It's got the right sink, the right bounce. And man, it smells great. It's going to last a really long time. Buying online is easy, and here's the best part, it's completely risk-free. Because they know, a lot of people say, well, I want to sleep on it first. Good news, you can. You don't have to go to the showroom to do it. Order the mattress, and any time in the first 100 nights, if you decide it's not for you, just call them. They'll come, they'll take it, they'll refund every penny, it'll cost you nothing. It's a much better way than lying on a mattress for 10 minutes in a showroom. You can really see if you like this mattress, and you will, by the way. Customers who purchase a Casper rated 4.6 out of 5 stars. And by the way, I have Casper pillows too. I'm all in on the Casper. And this is a dual layer pillow. I have the Kings. They have King and regular size. And the King is almost like a body pillow. It's just great. It's so comfortable. I scrunch it up and I am happy. You want to try it? Please be my guest. Go to casper.com/floss. Let's make sure Floss Weekly gets credit for it. And get your Casper today. They start at $500. I'm going to give you $50 off if you use the promo code FLOSS, FLOSS. Casper.com/floss, promo code FLOSS. Some terms and conditions apply. You can find out more at Casper.com/terms. It's Casper, Casper.com/floss. And don't forget to use the offer code FLOSS to save $50 off the best mattress you will ever sleep on. You have my word on it. Casper. And if you don't like it, turn it. It'll cost you nothing. Now back to Floss Weekly.
So how much do I have to know to get started with this? I mean, what's the sort of a way to approach into this and add it to an application? Is it easy to install? Are there Linux packages for it?
Yeah, we have installers for all the major systems. For Mac and Windows, just download, double click. scenario as you would be used to from any others. So that just works. Other than that, you need to know about HTTP, how a URL works, how to like work with a response, and understand JSON. And that's basically it to get started. So if you know your way around on the web and in a browser, then you should be totally fine. But then all other languages should also be fine.
And so what's the smallest thing that makes sense to reach for this? I mean, I'm presuming anytime you want, you know, shared storage and get this all set up, but that it's something I could reach for. But are there also simpler solutions that I would reach for before this?
Good question. So in one of the things that if you talk to database people, and the thing that they never tell you usually is that their database is as good as any other database for most use cases, right? So. Okay. MySQL is a fine database. Mongo is a database. Postgres is a very fine database. And there's a bunch of others that are really great too. But for the 80-20 use cases, CouchDB works as well as any other database. So that's not a... If you want to write a blog, do it in any one of them. It won't make a difference very much. So as you get into the... I want to make an app that kind of works offline so that I can take on my phone and I know it always works, or that... I know, okay, I want to have a copy in New York and one in Tokyo, or I know I want to make a big cluster on the data center and want to make sure it still works, and maybe also like talk to like hundreds of thousands or millions of mobile phones. Then it's a little bit more specialized, where the core feature of Couch, the replication, the sync, becomes more interesting.
And I don't think we've actually asked, but what's the timing of Couch 2? Is it out now? Is it in beta? Where are we at?
I call it alpha now. We'll have a link in the show notes that has a write-up on how to get in on this. We have like 10 to 20 bugs that we are working on that we know of before we want to call it a beta. But now like we're in this weird limbo of like, oh, it's an alpha. I don't kind of want to try it. I don't want to wait for anyone else. But on the other hand, we kind of now need new people trying it out because we found all the bugs that we could find. So we now need to push people to give it a try and maybe... I'm going to just call it beta so people are a little less scared so that they can go in there. But we want to be very strict with like communicating what the stability of the software is so people don't run into it. So right now it's like get started. Like if you're planning a thing that goes out later this year, like you can start using CouchDB 2 and be prepared to report all the things to us. We'll fix them quickly and then you can move on. If you need something that's rock solid now, stick to 1x, maybe play with the 2x series, see if it works for you. So we're like a couple of weeks away from calling it a beta, but that also depends. Like I'm calling to all the listeners and to give it a try and report back to us.
A lot of people that are running kind of unit tests on Travis or any kind of continuous integration system, they're now all running all their tests against CouchDB 2. I think that's kind of one of the best ways to get started right now is to actually... run your unit tests or any testing you're doing locally or anything, run it on, you know, deploy to 1x in production, but do a good test locally as well and run it against 2 as well. It's a great way to kind of test to see, make sure the behavior is the same, make sure if you spot anything that looks different to let us know. And it's a great way to at least start getting familiar with how it behaves.
And what's migration like from 1 to 2?
In terms of infrastructure, just replication. So you set up a 2x cluster, a 2.0 cluster, and replicate over to the new cluster. And then you can maybe switch your HTTP proxy or routing to the new server, and you're done. So it just works. And in terms of upgrading your client code, there's like 99.9% API parity. There's a few new things in Couch 2.0 and a little bit like more efficient behavior, but the operations are the same. They look the same. There's very little you need to do to upgrade your application to work with 2.
Oh, nice. Cool. And what is we've mentioned the word a couple times. What is PouchDB and how does it work with CouchDB?
All right. So, no, Garen, I wanted to leave that to you.
Thanks. so PouchDB is a really brilliant database, and it's written in JavaScript. So the idea is PouchDB is basically CouchDB written in JavaScript, which you kind of, in the first time you kind of hear it, that's like a really weird idea. But the idea behind it is that it is designed to run in your browser. So it is a database in your browser, and it runs on top of IndexedDB or WebSQL, any kind of specific. So each browser has a database kind of built into it. So you've got WebSQL, you've got IndexedDB, you've got local storage. And PouchDB sits on top of that. And one of the really nice things that they do already is it's they kind of each browser or vendor has their own kind of little bugs or eccentricities around how their implementation of, say, IndexedDB or WebSQL works. So with PouchDB, they've kind of built it in so that they can kind of cater for that. So you kind of get a very consistent known behavior. But where the genius part of PouchDB comes in is that it follows the whole replication process of PouchDB. So you put data into PouchDB, it's saved into your browser. If you've got no external connection, so if you're offline at that moment, your app can still work. It still behaves exactly the same as if it's connected. Your user gets a great user experience. They can use it. The data is being saved. Everything's fine. The moment your connection comes in again, it follows the same replication protocol that PouchDB does, and it can replicate and sync your data back to the server. So you get this amazing scenario where you can build applications that work offline and as well as when they work online. So it works in the sense that PouchDB is saving all your data and it's making sure that it's continuously synchronizing all your data back with PouchDB.
And is that mean that you have all of PouchDB available to you, or is this a subset that's being programmed in JavaScript?
Yeah, you actually have the full functionality. There are some trade-offs around it. I mean, certain things like views, you've got to be very careful how you do it. But, I mean, you save your data, you can build views, you can do replication. PouchDB 2 has this new functionality called Mango, which is a new way of querying. I'm one of the maintainers of that side, and we've done our own implementation in PouchDB to do that as well. You know, you can do all of these things. It's kind of also comes down to the fact of, like, you've got to be responsible in some sense. Don't try and put a gigabyte of data into your browser. But from within that, you can do a lot of really fantastic things in the way you build the application by being able to do all of that in PouchDB. Jan, I know you wanted to comment a bit there.
Even if you don't care about the synchronization bits of PouchDB, is kind of like jQuery was in 2006 to smooth over all the differences in DOM manipulation in the browsers. And browser storage today is in the same space where everybody is kind of not working in their own particular way, and PouchDB smooths over all of them. So you can use it for just that if you want.
And I'm happy that you have 50 regular contributors. What's the financial model for this? Is this all just a labor of love for all of you, or is there people building services on top of this, or what?
I
would say it's a bit of everything. I think some of the people working at are linked to IBM Cloudant. I mean, I do a bit of contracting work for Cloudant, and so that's how I kind of can fund some of my own open source development, as well as I do web application development. So for my side, we want to use PouchDB. We want to use PouchDB in the products we build for our clients. So we use that as well, and we can kind of make sure that we have time to kind of give back to the community. Jan, I mean, with Hoodie and stuff like that, I mean, you've also got an interesting way of working with it.
Right. Yeah. So Hoodie is based in Couch and Pouch. It's a more high level thing. We'll talk all about that next week. But we have an interest in having Couch continue to work, and we have some commercial clients that use Hoodie. We also offering CouchDB support. We're currently working with a large pink telecommunications company here in Germany. Work on a big PouchDB project, so they actually pay us a little bit to fix a few things in the PouchDB ecosystem. So that way, like, all sorts of like financing goes into the whole ecosystem.
We have a question from Esol, who often has some really great questions in our chat room, and this may be something that will take another hour to answer, but he says, I have a hard time getting my head wrapped around non-relational databases. It seems like you'd have to have a normalization nightmare. Is there any part of CouchDB that maintains data consistency? So as an example, from the documentation, if someone's name changes on their business card, how can I make sure the name changes well in an invoice they are related to?
That's an excellent question. And the metaphor that we're usually going with is that CouchDB behaves how data behaves in the real world. So if you have a business card and that same person also has an invoice, then if you change the name on the invoice, it doesn't change on the business card because it's a separate piece of paper that is in no way digital. So if you work with CouchDB, real world documents are kind of a good abstraction on how to think about this. Specifically, the question was about data consistency. Because of the way it does the scale out, the point where CouchDB guarantees consistency is a single document. So if things are working across documents, there's no transactional guarantees. There are a few tricks that you can do with views where you have a multiple documents that are guaranteed to be a snapshot at any point in time. So you can have a consistent group, but you can never be guaranteed to get that same group again in a subsequent call. So if you want to refer to it later, you have to cache it locally. So there are very different consistency guarantees than you have in a relational database or if you have a properly denormalized situation. One of the things to look at that, it might sound scary in the beginning, but if you have any experiences like scaling out databases, like you've seen all the blog posts about it, we're talking about avoiding joins because they are slow. So if you're at a if you're approaching Craigslist, Twitter, and that scale, they are using their relational databases very much like a non-relational database because that's just the fastest way they can work with them. Not saying that's useful for all use cases, and sometimes you just want to have very powerful querying, especially Postgres is really, really fancy stuff there. So sometimes maybe you want to have a hybrid system where maybe you do the syncing and the high availability and the scale out on the one thing and then have aggregation and analytics on a separate side.
Cool. We have a couple more good questions from the chat room. AFH asks, what aspects of the technology are the guests particularly proud of?
I'll take that one, too.
Well, I'll talk about one of the parts because I'm part of the team who wrote it, so I'm going to say I'm proud of it because I wrote it. Part of CouchDB 2 is the new web dashboard called Photon. So the original CouchDB 1X series is got Photon, which is just a web dashboard. You can log into it once CouchDB is up and running, and you can look at your data, you can build views and stuff like that. And Photon, we've tried to take that another level and build it so that it's easier to use your data. We've made it very modular so that you can actually take that dashboard, remove some functionality, and it works straight with PouchDB. And it's an interesting one because I think we've got some parts we've done it really well, some parts that we haven't quite gotten right yet, but we're still working on it. But it's an interesting experiment in building a single-page application with CouchDB behind it in some sense. And, you know, it's been a fun adventure building it. And I think I definitely think it adds a lot of benefit to CouchDB too. So for me, that's one of the things I'm really excited about coming out for CouchDB 2, but then I wrote it, so I'm probably a little bit biased.
No, I like it too.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I like Photon too. Maybe on the database side, CouchDB is written in Erlang, one of those more obscure programming languages that is known for fault tolerance and robustness. Mm-hmm. And for the 1X series, it's not quite true anymore, but it used to be that the database core, everything that we talked about was about 20,000 lines of code run by like 10, 15 people, which is significant. Like MySQL and the others are millions of lines of code, and 20,000 lines of code is not a lot of code to do all these all this fancy stuff. So I'm very proud of a very concise implementation, which allows us with a relatively small team to do relatively big things. Of course, with 2.0, this has significantly grown, but still Erlang is a very, very fine and fun language for the things that we're doing. So that's quite fun.
Cool. And what's the biggest pain points? What are the things that you're most annoyed at in the current code base and you need more people to help you out with?
So one thing that's really interesting that I would like to see more people in is doing performance tuning. I'm very upfront about this. CouchDB isn't the fastest horse in the race, not the slowest either, but there's definitely room for improvement. I have a bunch of series of blog posts that explains how to benchmark CouchDB, and you can like find your own use cases as well, and then explain like what tools to use to drill down to get a flame graph and to find the hotspots, and then you can like submit your report when we help on fixing it. So that's something that I'd love to see. We've done significant improvements between 1 and 2, like that are coming out with 2.0, but there's still room to make CouchDB a lot faster. So that's definitely one angle. And the other one is the MapReduce querying. We explained it, and it's really cool. And Garen also mentioned the Mango syntax that is borrowed from Mongo, of course, which is nice, but it isn't as powerful. So I would love to see more powerful querying on top of this. I wouldn't mind seeing a SQL engine on top of Couch, just so people can get more flexible querying out of the big data store that they're getting.
And
there's 1 or 2. We've got a couple other libraries that are linked to CouchDB that are all part of our Apache Foundation. So we've got 2 kind of JavaScript ones that are really nice. We've got one called Nano, which is just a nice client to work with CouchDB. So, you know, if you're looking to kind of get started, that's also a really nice one, especially if you're kind of familiar with JavaScript. And then we have one called Nemo that myself and Robert Kowalski Robert started it. And it's one of those simple kind of command line clients to kind of make it easy for someone to set up a CouchDB 2 cluster and kind of interact with it. And so, you know, it's difficult to kind of find the time to work on everything that we kind of create. And I mean, it'd be amazing to have to other people to kind of look into it, look into our Jira ticket and see what we've kind of listed as things we need help with and kind of dive in on those ones as well. Those are sometimes a little bit easier, lower hanging fruit to get started than trying to have to, kind of scale yourself up on Erlang. So there's some JavaScript, which I think probably more JavaScript developers than Erlang. So if you want to get started, it's a great gateway drug into the rest of the CouchDB development.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And, the big takeaway is you don't need to know Erlang to contribute to Couch. That's very important. And even the performance thing that I mentioned, you don't have to know Erlang really well to, or at all, to get started with it. We'll teach you everything on the go then.
Okay, hey, we're almost out of time. Is there anything we didn't ask that you want to make sure our audience is aware of? Either of you?
CouchDB is awesome, and the community is great. And
it's the pitch. It's the pitch. Yes.
Yeah. You haven't given me the 30-second pitch yet. Yeah. No. CouchDB is actually an interesting community to be involved with. I think it's very diverse, and I think we're building a really interesting product. And I think, it's a nice one to hang out. I think the IRC channel is a great place. You know, we're on Freenode under CouchDB or CouchDB-dev if you want to look into the dev side. And it's definitely, CouchDB is one of those that really kind of stretches your mind. If you're used to relational database, CouchDB is definitely something you should try out to kind of learn something new, whether you use it in your project or not. It's at least, expands your mind, gets you thinking in a different way. And I think the CouchDB community is very open and friendly and a great way to kind of get involved in open source.
Awesome. Okay. Go ahead. Sorry.
If you want to get started, go to blog.couchdb.org, where we post, among other things, a weekly news that is a summary of everything that's going on in the ecosystem. That includes calls to contribution or links to Stack Overflow questions that haven't found answers yet that you can help out with if you know Couch a little, and generally like know what's going on. And like there's tons of things every week that you can just jump into and spend a lot of time on if you want.
Does CouchDB have its own conference already?
We have a thing called CouchConf that irregularly happens. Last one was in Hamburg about a year ago. I'm pretty sure we'll do one this week. This year, but I haven't done any big planning on this yet.
Okay, 2 final questions for both of you, then I got to let you guys go. We'll start with Jan. What's your favorite scripting language?
I like Shell.
Okay. Okay. And your favorite text editor?
I'm off the Emacs camp, but on the Mac, so I really like TextMate, but if I'm on anywhere else, it's Emacs.
Yay, that's 0.5. I'm counting that as 0.5 for me. All right. I'm counting that for sure. And Garen, same 2 questions.
Well, you can see my beard isn't near as cool as Jan, so I'm not quite as old school. Scripting language, I must be honest, I'm in that JavaScript camp. So I do like writing my scripts in Node.js just because I think I am terrible at writing shell scripts. So I normally just or end up deleting my whole database or my whole hard drive if I dive into those. And in terms of editors, I used to use Vim a lot and I loved it. And now I decided I want to keep up with the cool kids. So I've started using Atom, which has Vim built into it. And it's got some interesting plugins that really helps development. So I've actually been really impressed with it and actually started using that a lot more now.
Yeah, we're hoping to get Atom on a future show. I have a note to follow up with something I talked about at OSCON last year. Very good. Well, this has been wonderful chatting with you guys. I think I might actually give this a try again. I think I actually tried CouchDB1 back in the day, but it sounds like this is going to be a lot cooler. So thanks for being on the show and talking about CouchDB and everything else you're working on.
Thanks for having us.
Very good. Very good. That was Jan Leonard and Garen Smith. What do you think there, Simon?
Well, so this is one of the stalwarts of the NoSQL database world, you know, as I say, what we used to call storage engines back in the old days.
Yeah.
And, I think there's very little to criticize. It's, you know, good, solid piece of code developed by a good, solid community in a very safe and worthy open source foundation. And I'd say if you were looking for code to include in your project, you should start with CouchDB and use it unless there was something that was obviously better.
Sure. Sounds great. And also, I like the fact that they've sort of figured out multi-master, got it correct, and got the scaling correct on that. And I'm also very pleased with the fact that IBM donated a lot of the replication code. So that would be a great partnership then. So that what IBM gets back, of course, is that people find out about that IBM did that, but also that they get a better product in the end anyway. So that's really cool. Anything else before we move on?
Yeah, well, it's a pretty classic open source model, you know, a real open source project is one where all the participants have got an interest in the project that's outside the scope of the project community itself. So the project community itself doesn't need to do marketing, doesn't need to raise money, doesn't need to have a business model. I mean, any open source project with a business model is otherwise known as a company. the whole way that CouchDB is operating within Apache is an exemplar of how open source projects ought to work. And then in addition, the CouchDB project has been able to go challenge some of the some of the older aspects of the Apache Software Foundation by bringing in, for example, the policies towards that will promote diversity and to challenge the fixation with the using Subversion and introduce Git. So it's obviously a community that's doing good to Apache as well as producing good code.
Well, that's a nice synergy then. It's very, very cool. Okay, so let's talk about upcoming guests for a minute. I don't have many on the schedule right now. I just barely opened up Q2, so I'm now sending out my usual flurry of about 30 or 40 messages to try to get people to look at the calendar and sign themselves up for one of the days. But what I do have, of course, is we have Jan Leonard coming back next week to talk about Hoodie. So we'll get a lot more information about that. We also have the co-leaders of Linux Camp 2016. It's a place where you can get certified as a whatever they certify people for in Linux, whatever all those are. That's David Wilson and Heather Wilson are going to join us for that. We have from Mozilla, one of the senior people in Mozilla, Brett Gaylor, who's going to be talking about their new security initiative to try to get people using stronger security in browsers and security is the big phrase these days. So they're going to come on and talk about that. We have as we typically do right around this time of year, we'll have an OSCON preview with a couple of the directors of OSCON will be coming in. By the way, they've already given me the discount. So if you haven't signed up for OSCON yet, if you use the code, get this, write this down, FLOSS, FLOSS, just like the name of the show. When you sign up, you'll get a 20% discount off of OSCON's prices. So that is really cool. Thanks for them to do that. You can find out more about this show at the homepage, twit.tv/FLOSS. From there, you'll find the link to the big spreadsheet where you can see how I'm actually organizing and scheduling people for Q2. If there is somebody on... No, not somebody on that list. If there's somebody that's not on that list that you want to have on this show, the right way to do this is to write them, the community coordinator or the project leader, who would most represent the project, and have them email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. That address is on the homepage for this show. So if you'd forget it, it's right there. We do have a live stream. We took a number of questions from there today. We tape this show typically at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesdays, and that follows the U.S. Daylight Savings Time Convention, and we're going to make a switch, I guess, in a couple weeks. If you go to live.twit.tv, you can see the chat room. You can see us actually behind the scenes doing the show. You can also follow us at Floss Weekly on Google+ and at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Merlyn, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter. But I primarily post to Google Plus, and then it gets rebroadcast to all the other services I have out there. I am going to be at OSCON as press. I'm going to try to find somebody to interview on our new Tuesday slot, which is actually a bit awkward because it's the first day of the actual show. It hasn't really started yet, so we'll find somebody, though. And I'm also going to be at YAPSE North America, as long as they accept me as a press person there, too. So if you're at either of those conferences, come look for me and talk to me about this show or you know, the Pearl Books. It's okay, too. I'm still pretty happy about those. Anything for you to plug, Simon?
Pretty quiet at the moment. I've got a lot of client work that I'm doing, and I'm not getting out much. If I can find a way to travel to Austin, and I can overcome my fear of open carry, then I'll be there in Austin for OSCON. Apart from that, please go and get a subscription to Linux Voice Magazine. They've just come up for their renewal period, and they need you to renew your subscription so that you can read my monthly column on open source news that's at the front of the magazine. So please get that. And I'm occasionally contributing still to InfoWorld magazine. But the best place to find me is on Twitter, where I'm WebMink, or on Google Plus, where you'll find me as Simon Phipps. That's all I've got to plug, Randall. So back to you.
Sounds good. And I thank you for jumping in at the last second again. It seems like I'm doing that every week now. Somebody has to step forward at the last second. I need to work these out ahead of time. Maybe I should schedule them like 5 or 6 weeks in a row. That might help my anxiety there. But thank you again for joining and asking interesting, useful questions.
It's my pleasure. It's good to be a more frequent co-host on the show at the moment. Long may it last.
Great. Okay. You're hoping it doesn't last, right? Anyway. Good. All right. And we'll see you all again next week on FWOS Weekly.